Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Mike. Man, we're in Muscle Shoals, your hometown. You guys got a big show tonight. Got a release that just came out, Stain on My Soul, number three on the charts and that, man. How does it feel?
It feels amazing.
Yeah?
It's kind of numb.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how to react.
Yeah.
I was anticipating it was going to be, it'll do well.
Yeah.
But to hit number three within 12 hours, 13 hours is amazing.
Yeah. Well, you guys have put in a lot of hard work, you know, a lot of time, a lot of resources and that to get to this point.
Yes.
That's got to feel good.
Yeah. Now we're beyond sight. This the momentum right now is just building and building and building. It's just the tip of the iceberg for us.
Yeah. Now, outside of the show that's tonight, you know, there's something that I thought was really cool. You were recently in a magazine, you know, talking about your passion for guitars.
Right.
In that really cool green Firebird.
Yeah,
yes. Tell us about that.
It's a one-of-a-kind custom shop Firebird. It took them about 11 months to build. If you see it in person, like the picture doesn't do justice of the green sparkle and but it's just one of a kind matching headstock, ebony fingerboard, and it plays like a dream.
Yeah. Now, it, are you going to have it here tonight?
No, I'm scared to bring it out. Everybody's been asking, like, you're the guy with the green guitar. Are you going to bring the guitar?
Right.
But I'm so nervous to bring it out. But I brought my gold tops.
Ah, well, man, that's probably equally as cool.
Yeah.
In that, but you know what? You're a huge enthusiast when it comes to the guitars and to gear and to stuff like that. And the people that tune into Guitar Talk, one of the things they always want to know is, how did Mike become Mike? In other words, what did you do in the early formative days, man, that have turned you into the beast of a player you are right now?
Well, it's kind of, you call me a beast. I'm trying to be a beast.
Yeah, well, you are.
But it started really young. You know, and there was starts and stuff. But I started 6 years old, and there was always a lot of music in my house. And, you know, my parents had the old record collection. You know, it's like the furniture that goes from here to the next building over.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of jazz, a lot of country, a lot of blues. And then I had this my aunt who recently passed away. She was another one. This loved music, and. At her house, she has all these, at the time, she had the reel-to-reels. Mm-hmm. And as a kid, you know, this is how to be, in the 70s, I didn't realize the significance. Well, I remember we couldn't walk by it. Can't touch the reel-to-reel, you know.
Right.
But she had, these Chet Atkins and Les Paul and all these, these recordings from that era.
Yeah.
And it was always kind of, I always called a cute thing. She would always send me stuff, and that's how we communicated like that throughout the years. She's like, sends me something. Do you ever hear of Eric Clapton? And sends me a recording. Have you ever heard of Les Paul? And then I would find a guitar player, I would send it to her, and we would just trade back music back and forth. And but that's what really got me going. And then they wanted me to be the next Segovia.
Yeah.
So they got me a nylon, and that was not going to be
that Segovia. Wasn't you. I don't picture you.
And then around 12 years old, my brother, who also passed, but he was a bass player, and he was 3 years old. So, you know, if you're 12 and they're 15, there's such a huge influence.
Yeah.
And he's the one who got me my first record, Aerosmith Rocks and Kiss and Pink Floyd, and he exposed me to all that stuff. And then he was in a popular cover band at that time, so he would always let me sit in and play, you know, like Sabbath or whatever, and just let his little brother, I would mess up all the songs, but the band was always nice, and that's how it started. And then around 15, 16, I started playing the clubs. Because in New York, you know, you can be in a bar and play at 16, and you have your license at 16.
Right.
So I just started doing that, playing the guitar. And I, you know, looking back at that time, I got to play with so many cool people. You know, I got to play with Rainbow and Blackboard and all these guys. And at the time, it's this is cool.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really, taking it in. I thought that was normal, Yes, that's my formative years.
That's cool. Now tonight, going back to the show tonight, I mean, you guys are double bill, double headline with Jared James Nichols, man.
He's the beast.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he is a beast. But, you know, that within itself, like, you got a song, you know, your third single released, you're at number three. Now you're doing this debut show here at Muscle Shoals and for the record.
Right.
And you're headlining with Jared James Nichols. And you've got Anthony Curzon from the Spin Doctors.
He's also a great guitar player.
Yeah, he's a great guitar player. Yeah, you know, so.
He's a pretty neat slide player there.
You guys, you're on top of the world right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like I said, it's kind of, I'm just taking it in.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how to react yet until I think after it's done.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a great show, you know, man. And I'm, you know, I'm just excited to be a little part of it, you know, in some way. And I know you guys are going to have a killer night.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are pumped. You know, the feedback we've been getting, you know, online and calls. And I think it's going to be a packed house. And people in this town, they've been dying for a hard rock band.
Yeah.
You know, or I should say more like an original hard rock band. And, and here we are.
So just in case you don't know, you know, In Theory released Stained on My Soul a couple of days ago. You can get it everywhere. Their new video released. It's out there as well. It's amazing. That was done by Juan Ibanez in St. Louis. It's a really good thing. So do yourself a favor and go out and check it out. And that, and if you're in the Florence area, well,
come on down.
Come on down. Thanks, Mike.
And no earplugs.
No earplugs, man. It's gonna be a great rock show.
We want everybody to go deaf after this.
Yeah, that's it, man. That's it. All right. Thanks. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, dude, I've been following you for a long time. I've had you on my show a couple of times. You were at my guitar show.
Yep.
And now you're here in Muscle Shoals.
Yep.
A new market for you.
Absolutely.
Man, you're killing it.
Thanks, man. I'm just glad to be here. I'm so glad that you know, hit me up after we did the guitar show. We remained friends, and I get to play with Mike. And you guys, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be a really good... But tell me a little bit about what's going on right now in the life of Jared James Nichols.
A lot. So we this year, right now, so I saw you in January. That's when I got my record out.
Yeah.
So since then, I've done 3 tours across America, 3 times over Europe. I have about a month and a half tour lined up for Europe again in the fall, another month in the States. So basically, I've just been on the road like crazy.
Yeah.
Everything's been great. I have a brand new guitar coming out with Epiphone we talked about.
Yeah.
The Blues Power Les Paul that comes out in November.
Right.
Signature Seymour Duncan pickup coming out. I'm designing a brand new amp with Blackstar. Beyond that, I'm doing a guitar course with True Fire.
That's cool.
Just a bunch of different stuff, man. I've been staying very, very busy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's been a hell of a ride for the last, you know, handful of years for you. And you've had the opportunity to tour with some of the, I mean, really, literally, some of the best bands in the world.
Yeah.
What I want to know is, how was the experience with the Winery Dogs?
Oh, it was incredible. So
they're players.
They're players.
Yeah.
So you'll love this story. So we actually, we did 12 shows with Winery Dogs. So we show up to the first show with 2 canceled flights. We had to get on a train. We had none of our gear.
Yeah.
So we're borrowing cymbals from Mike Portnoy. I'm borrowing guitar cables from Richie and Billy Sheehan. We're borrowing their gear. And from moment one of meeting those guys, they were so sweet.
Yeah.
And Richie and I hit it off big time. It's really cool too, because I feel like I'm always put in these situations where I have to rise above, like opening for the Winery Dogs. People are ready to see them and they're insane.
Yeah.
So it's like, I have to come, I have to bring it.
Right.
And it's so funny, I even heard from my agent that Richie was asking us to go on their next tour, but we were already booked on a different one. But I think that there's going to be a lot more stuff with them in the future.
Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah. I mean, they are great players and they're super nice guys. But I think when people finally see you live, I mean, listening to your records is one thing.
Right.
Watching the videos you do, which are really good, is one thing. But like what happened to me when you came to the guitar show, when I finally saw you play live, and it was just you and the guitar, like it's going to be tonight.
Yep.
Man, I was blown away. Really blown away by how well you play.
Thank you, man.
I mean, you're a player.
I love it. And I kind of play weird, right? I don't play with a pick.
Right.
I have a lot of different influences. You know, I didn't just grow up listening to the guys in the 60s or whatever. So there's a lot of different stuff going on, and I'm just... I feel really grateful that I get to play and I get to travel and I get to see the world with a guitar.
That's
great, man.
And you get your picture.
Now, look at this. There's
on the guitar.
We got, obviously, the boss, right? some guy named Joe Satriani, and then this clown.
Oh, that's a rock and roll picture,
I remember when that picture was taken, I was on tour with Black Label Society, and we were playing that was in Detroit, Michigan, and this photographer walked up to me and showed me that picture, and he goes, look at that one.
Yeah.
I was like, that's a good picture. Now here we are.
Yeah,
hanging out with you.
There it is. I don't know how I got it, but it's there. Yeah, I am too, man. Well, you're playing Dorothy tonight.
Yeah.
Which is your 52?
52, yeah. That was gifted to me by a fan. Early 52. It's one of the first 15 to 25 wow. Les Pauls ever produced. Crazy guitar with a crazy history. Like, sometimes I look at that thing and I just laugh because I'm like, how did I get so lucky to get it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you got a horseshoe in your pocket or
remember
something.
Remember at the guitar show?
I know. Somebody gave you an amazing guitar then.
A 66 Firebird.
Yeah, I know.
Guy walks up, and I remember I was telling you this. When we were at Jimmy's guitar show, I was so sick, and I remember I had a bad voice. I was like, I am, you know. And he walks up, and he's like, I want to show you my guitar. And he had some of my records to sign. And shows me the guitar. I was like, man, this is awesome. You know, it's a beautiful guitar. And he goes, yeah, I was thinking, you know, you could use it in studio. I don't know if you want to play it live. And I was like, yeah, and I'm not really following where he's going with this.
Right.
And then he goes, well, here's the case. And I don't have the original case, but it'll do good in this case. And there's a strap and some, you know, and I'm like, what's going on here? And he's like, oh, I'm just giving it to you.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, this is crazy.
Yeah, that was amazing.
That was amazing.
That was amazing, yeah. And so, you know, have you played it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't toured with it.
Right.
What's funny with that guitar is, like, not to get nerdy, but, you know, I'm used to Les Pauls with the neck set at a certain spot.
Yeah.
Big, fat necks.
Right.
A lot of body. With that guitar, it's thin.
Right.
It plays like this. What's so funny is when I got home, I took it to a session. And I used it to double track a part, like the day I got it. And my buddy looks back at me from the control room and he gives me that look like, yeah. So I go in there and I hear it. And that thing has such an awesome sonic, like, point where, like, mixing that with a Les Paul.
Yeah.
And also I get my John Winter on with that thing.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's got a sound all its own. And it's really, really cool because it pushes me to play something different. So in the future, when I'm taking out more guitars, I'd like to take it out.
Yeah, I think as a player, man, when you get known for a certain thing, like for instance, Ricky Medlock with the Explorer.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I know that when he doesn't play the Explorer, people go, well, where is it?
Yeah, where's the Explorer?
What's wrong?
Is
he sick? You know, and you've kind of become iconic with that certain look, that Les Paul with a P90.
Totally.
You know, and...
it's cool too because obviously it's such a tried and true guitar and I'm just trying to find my own voice in it.
Yeah. Well, your signature models are beasts. You know, I told you before that I had almost pulled the trigger on it a million times.
Yep.
And then I finally did. You know, I finally got one of your gold ones. And I mean, you're right. The neck's like a baseball bat.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's definitely something Mickey Mantle would use.
Yes. That's a Mickey Mantle.
It's a big, thick, you know, guitar in that. But it sounds so good, you know. And it's hard for me to believe, you know, coming from, you know, forgive me for saying it, an Epiphone, I just wasn't expecting it to be that good.
I think most people, when they think of Epiphone, still to this day, they think of, okay, this is going to be the cheap, low-quality version, look-alike of a Gibson. And when I was a kid coming up, I remember playing Epiphones and going, yeah, it's cool. I really like the way it looks, but it doesn't sound and it doesn't feel like that. But I remember when I got offered to do the Epiphones in middle 2018, they said, hey, we could do a custom shop if you want. We can do that. It's just a high price. They said, or if you're interested, we would like to develop a range with you on Epiphone. And like automatically, because, you know, I remember being a kid and saying, I remember when I bought my first Epiphone, how important it was because I bought it with my own money from working.
Right.
And I thought to myself, how cool would it be to have a guitar that, you know, is awesome, that obviously it's a signature model, but people can afford it. And I remember when they sent me the first prototype, I was blown away because I was used to like Epiphone, you know, mid-2000s.
Right.
And then I played this and I was like, this is incredible. And my guitar too, single P90, volume tone, rat tail bridge, Grover tuners, it's so simple. It's like, if they just put it together right, it's gonna be great. And thankfully with these signature models, man, like the one you got, the Gold Glory, Like that was like the 2.0 of the old glory. And then all of a sudden I get the prototype for the one, the Blues Power that's coming out, the Pelham Blue one that comes out in November. And I'm like, I couldn't believe they got it better, but they did. So it's it just keeps evolving, and it's really cool.
And it's the same configuration?
Same configuration, but it's going to have locking tuners because a lot of players, I feel like, when they play Les Paul, especially if it's not like they're like number one, like I feel like for me, I'm like so used to it. But a lot of my friends, they go, oh, I like Les Pauls or whatever, but they don't stay in tune that well. Yeah. So I was talking to them, and I was like, how can we figure out a way? Is there something we could do? It's like locking tuners, you know. Yeah. I like the simplicity of them too. Easy for string changes.
Right.
You put them on, stretch them once, they're
right.
good.
Right.
And then it's also going to have my signature Seymour Duncan. It's basically, they call it the JJN silencer pickup. So what it is it's a true P90, but it has two dummy coils on it that are going to act as, basically, they cancel out that buzz. They don't cancel out all the buzz. Probably 80% of it.
Yeah.
But it's perfect, Jimmy, because touring and playing live, especially someone that's not used to P90s, playing that guitar with that silencer, it just feels so good.
Yeah, I love the P90s. I mean, that's my signature telly, which is in there. I have to show it to you.
Yeah.
They got bare knuckles.
Oh, yeah.
The ones at the necks of P90, absolutely love it.
I love P90s, and this is a great in-between for someone that...
Excuse me. We're doing an interview. Sorry. No, it's all right.
It's a great in-between for someone to, you know, basically be able to say, okay, cool, I love humbuckers. I love single coils like on a Strat. What's up with that P90? I've always been told that they're too buzzy. And then it's like, you play one, you understand that there's something special about it.
Yeah. It's a go-to. I mean, if you've never played a guitar with P90s, you have to.
That's what I tell people all the time, too. With mine, they're like, well, it looks like there's one pickup. What is there to it? And it's like, it's literally whatever you put into it, you know. It's so user-friendly that, like, you and I could trade it back and forth, play the same lick, but it's going to sound completely different. It's just such an exposed, you know. I always say the P90s are great because they didn't really get messed with a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the P90s, they're so tried and true, and there's a reason they buzz. They don't block out a lot of frequencies. So when you hit it and it sounds great, it's just that full spectrum. It's literally catching everything. The lights, everything.
Right. Yeah, it's an amazing guitar. Well, I'm excited to hear you tonight, man.
I'm excited to hear you.
I'm glad to be here with you. Yeah. And hopefully we can do some more later on.
Totally. I'm a massive fan of you and the podcast. And
I appreciate that.
I'm just glad to be here, man.
Yeah, cool.
Cheers.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
So man, let's talk about, a little bit about your history. You know, I mean, you've got a unique pedigree, you know, you played with some really cool cats and that. But before we jump into some of that kind of stuff, I'd really like to know the things that you did in the formative days of developing yourself as a player and an artist that you think made you the player that you are now.
Yeah, man. Well, I've been playing gigs since I was like 12 years old. I started playing with my brother, who was a blues player, and like Johnny Winter and, you know, the Stones and Creedence and stuff. And I played drums and sang. So I was doing gigs and then picked up the guitar around 14, 15, started writing songs with a guy in my high school. And we were doing like dances, playing parties and stuff. And out of high school, I ended up getting signed to a publishing deal with Sony as a songwriter, which led to a record deal on Chrysalis. And, you know, we made a record on Chrysalis that never came out, but I ended up, I guess, I don't know which order, but writing songs. I was doing demos in Hoboken at a place called Waterfront Studios, and Lenny Kravitz came in. Yeah. And I started, I kind of hit it off with Lenny.
Yeah.
And became friends.
But as a player, though, was it that you just, just woodshed, you know, for years? I mean, did you have like a routine, a schedule? I mean, what is it that helped develop you into the player?
Yeah, I mean, once I switched over to guitar around 14 or 15 from drums, I started playing the Hendrix and Jeff Beck, and I got into Fusion for a little bit.
Yeah.
But Hendrix was a big influence on me, I think, and Jeff Beck and some progressive stuff back then. Rush I was into.
Yeah.
Before I really started getting into blues and like Hendrix and the heavier stuff, I had like a progressive phase, you know.
Yeah.
Like Fusion, Brand X, and Frank Zappa, and all that stuff. I learned to kind of used to put on the record and just play for 8 or 10 hours a day, wear out the records, and you know, yeah. smoke pot back then.
you know, that's what it takes sometimes. Yeah. You got to spend that kind of time.
Yeah.
So when did you discover, though? I mean, what was the moment you would say that you discovered that this is your passion? This is the path you want to take?
That's a good question. Well, I kind of knew it all along. I just always, like, made my living on music since high school, but I kind of was always a full-timer and was dedicated to spending all my time with music because I just wanted to, the passion, you know,
yeah.
of guitar playing and, you know, writing songs and the recording process. But, yeah, studying records, like, you know, from Jeff Beck to Hendrix to even, like, King Crimson and different stuff. I kind of have a diverse palette of guitar players and musical styles, mm-hmm. like, you know, and I think from listening to all the music and studying the records, I could kind of, you know, switch hats guitar-wise.
I think that that's something that, you know, is really good for any player to be able to, you know, take something from a wide variety of styles and genres and players. You know, it's yeah. like you get cats that I'm a rock guitarist and this is what I listen to and these are the yeah. guys and that's it. You know, and then you tell somebody, well, do you listen to Alan Hines or do you listen to, you know, somebody else? And they're like, well, who's that?
Yeah.
And you're like, well, these are cats that yeah. you really should be paying attention to. I mean, you might not be like them.
Yeah.
But you're definitely going to draw something.
Yeah, I mean, like I used to, like I said, when I was in the Fusion, I would listen to like Al DiMeola, and I went to see yeah. him in like Paco de Lucia. I'm like, wow, these guys were blowing my mind with stuff that, you know, you don't hear on the radio. But, you know, there's a Fusion, but at the time there was a movement of Fusion, like when Jeff Beck was doing Freeway Jam and that kind of stuff was out. Mm-hmm. I mean, for guitar players, it was like really, you know, inspirational, you know.
Right, right. So, again, you know, yeah. those guys, especially when you're talking about fusion.
Yeah.
You know, John Harrington.
Yeah, yeah.
Jimmy, the guy from Widespread Panic.
Yeah, Jimmy Harrington.
Yeah, Jimmy Harrington. Yeah. And again, Alan Hines and cats like that, man. There's yeah. just Mike Stern.
Yeah.
Frank Gambale.
Yeah, and you can hear the diversity in their playing. You know, they studied yeah. a bunch of stuff and they weren't in one little box. And, you know, they had a toolbox and all the stuff they'd listened to and shed their own chops on, you know, and they pull them out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you want to play something simple and emotional like a B.B. King thing, and then other times you want to shred, you know.
Yeah. So when you're studying musicians and that, you know, developing yourself and paying attention to those guys, at the same time, were you one of those guys that was really in tune to gear? Because some guys aren't, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
some
yeah,
guys
yeah,
are
yeah.
just, I play guitar, I go through this amp, and I listen to this guy. And then there's other guys that are like really, you know, mindful of, you know, delay, different delays and
yeah.
how to set them up and how to stack, you know, drives and yeah. things. Like, were you that guy or?
I mean, kind of. I mean, I just always had like, from my brother, I'd have the Fender amps and he'd like at the time, Sun amps were popular and different things would come, even Gallon Krueger in the 80s. Mm-hmm. But I always was a tube amp kind of guy, you know, so I started trying to find the best amps once like Stevie Ray came along and all those guys you'd study. I got a Super Reverb that I still have that I love, but I would always look at the gear. And then I guess I'm not crazy with the pedals, but I would just find like certain things that work for me. But now I'm kind of into the pedals more. There's so many great boutique pedals out, you know, you can, you know.
Yeah. Well, and you have your own studio. You
yeah.
know, you help produce and engineer for other people in that, so you have to be mindful of those things in that
yeah.
setting in that.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, again, there's players that just don't pay any attention to, they're not, well, lack of a better word, they're not techie people, you
yeah.
know what I mean? They're not
yeah.
like me. I can take 30 drive pedals and spend a week,
yeah.
you know, going through them all and, you know, stacking them in different ways and, you know,
yeah,
doing
yeah,
different
yeah.
things, trying to develop something. And there's a lot of guys that don't do that. But when you're trying to develop your own sound, I mean, how did that
yeah,
come
yeah.
about for you?
I guess, I was always more in the overdrives and like delay and stuff, but I would check out all the different fuzz pedals because I love Jimi Hendrix. I always
yeah.
been a fan of fuzz. And like you said, trying to get that tone that makes you play better, but stand out as a player because of your certain sound and stuff. So I guess, yeah, I mean, I spent, you know, playing through different pedals and buying different stuff at thrift shops and mm-hmm. guitar stores, you know.
It's hard, wouldn't
yeah.
you say? It's hard to develop your own sound because there's so many, you know, players and different tones already out there, and people are trying to emulate those things. Yeah. And in order to stand out, you somehow have to be different, whether it's in your tone or your playing or a combination of both.
Yeah, right, yeah.
You know? So how do you develop that, you know?
I guess I think a lot of it's in your hands. Like when you see great players, like I got to work with Mick Taylor and he came to my studio and he was going through the same amp I recorded with, and every solo he did, I was like, oh my God, you know, and asking him, what did you use on those records? And he went into a deluxe reverb straight in with a 54 gold top with a little echo. And that's kind of what I use now. But I think it comes from your hands with a lot of these guys, like Jeff Beck, and, you know, he's into an amp and he works his tone controls a lot, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I kind of try and do, but it is like finding the right pedals that work. Cause sometimes, you know, for any situation when you're in a bar gig or even any kind of gig, you have to watch your volume and try and get your sound in different rooms and places, so it comes in handy. But knowing how to work your own guitar, there's a lot of tones right in within the reach of your hands and the controls, I think.
Yeah, that's another thing that's really interesting about playing guitar, because again, there are guys that don't, you know, like their tone's up to 10, their volume's up to 10, they don't manipulate those in any way to help develop, you know, and create a certain sound or style, you know, at the moment in the song and that. And then once you learn how to do that, you would say, wouldn't you say that, you know, that is really what helps you stand out, push you over the edge?
Yeah, right? I think so. Just having it in your hands and knowing how to work the guitar and any kind of gear if you're in a situation at a, you know, with this back line and you don't have a choice to get a matchless or whatever you'd like to use, you can make it work.
Yeah.
If you know, spend enough time, like you said, developing your sound with the tools within yourself, the guitar, and any kind of special stuff you use.
Yeah, because a lot of the legends, they always say, well, you can go to any store and you can pick up a Fender amp or a Marshall amp and you can sound just like me. And that's just not true.
No, it's in the player, really. Like all the guys we love, they spent a lot of time, like, you know, finding the right gear that works for them, but they can probably get a good sound out of any kind of amp if you put them in a situation, right? I mean, it's going to sound like that player.
Exactly. It doesn't matter what amp or what guitar they play. They sound like them, you know, which is, well, again, is really unique because, you know, a lot of guys are trying to sound like somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, so you've had a pretty interesting career, man. You've played with some really cool guys. I feel cool sitting here with you because you played with Noel Redding, right? Yeah, I played with Buddy Miles and Billy Cox a couple of times, you know? So it's like, you know, we both have circled the Hendrix camp. So what was, you know, I don't normally ask guys what it's like to play with somebody, but when you're talking about some of the cats like John Wade, Noel Redding, and guys like that, I mean, they're a piece of musical history.
Yeah.
You know, they really are.
Yeah, and I felt blessed to play with Noel. As soon as we did one gig, the first gig we did, I think it was me and Earl Slick, Frankie LaRocca, met Noel at the Music Awards and stuff, and he just kind of asked him if he'd want to, kind of got his number and said, would you want to do a gig if you put something together? And he said, yeah. So it was Jack Daly on bass from Lenny Kravitz's band, me, Earl Slick and Noel Redding, and it was really cool. Then we just became friends and started doing like trio gigs.
Yeah.
And it was great. Noel was such a character, man. It was so cool, and he always got a kick out of when we played. We'd kind of mix it. So we did a lot of, you know, we would mix up the set a little bit, but he would always kind of say to the audience, yeah, we rehearsed for 5 minutes, and it would always keep it loose. And if I forgot the lyrics, he'd be like, don't worry about it, mate, just sing the same verse.
Make something up.
Yeah, he wouldn't care. He would just like keep it loose and would always make you feel comfortable. But yeah, it was pretty cool to look over playing Stone Free or Foxy Lady, Voodoo Child or something, and you're like looking over and Noel's playing it just like the record. And, and it was pretty much like a really... He was a great guy, but it was like I had to like pinch myself, you know, like, man, that's Noel Redding.
Yeah, whenever you get the opportunity to spend some time with a legend like that, it's always amazing.
Yeah.
You know? So you always walk away going, damn, I can't believe I just...
I know. Noel always played my 71 jazz bass, man, too.
Oh, really?
They had his bass out, like he came out with a new, you know, Fender put out his the replica of his bass, and he comes over. And like I thought he'd have the bass with him because he got it for free from Fender, and he's like, I'm like, no, where's your signature bass? He's like, fuck that, mate. I'd like your Fender. Man. Where's your bass?
That's crazy. That's cool. So you spent a little time with the Spin Doctors, which had to really push your profile a little bit because at one point in time they were pretty popular band at one time and that. But now you're doing your own thing.
Yeah, I mean, the Spins were cool. I was in that band about 3 years, and it was a really good time. It was a fun band. The rhythm section was great with Aaron and Mark. We got to open for the Stones, the Allman Brothers, and we're doing some big shows, and I made the third record. That was a lot of fun, you know. But yeah, I mean, I like my new music, I think, is blues-based, you know, kind of riff-oriented, but I always try, as a songwriter, I do a lot of songwriting. I always make sure my lyrics are strong and it's less melodic, but it has, heavy stuff with mixing soul and a southern feel to it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got a great voice. You get a good tone out of your guitar, and you know, you're a great player and stuff. And so the combination of all that is really cool. You know, we're here in Muscle Shoals area getting ready to do a show tonight. Yeah, together.
It's like to play with you too.
Yeah, man. It was, you know, just jamming, you know, rehearsing stuff was a lot of fun. And you know, you're an exciting player, so it's gonna be a great gig. So,
thanks, man. I look forward to playing with you, Jim.
Yeah, but what's the next step for Anthony?
For me, well, I'm trying to I'm really proud of the body of work I have out right now, and I'm trying to figure out I got a few options to release it, and that's what I'm working on to put it out, to try and get on the right situation label wise, get more, to reach more people, because it's let's face it. The way the music business is, I mean, there's a lot of music coming out every day on the digital format. So you gotta figure out, even if you have great music and you're a great player, there's got the, on the business side, it's a whole nother avenue, to try and get your music out and cut in front of the line, And I think, I've done enough to get, people's interest. So I'm just working at the right situation now.
It seems like, you can be a great player, but the way the industry is now, the way music is released and stuff like that, it's really hard to push through the noise, because it is, anybody, can use their phone or a laptop or whatever, and they can make a song and put it out, and it makes it hard. There's big bands that put out music, and I have no idea it's out.
I know, yeah.
The only way I know is a publicist will reach out to me and say, hey, these guys just put
out. I know, so it's going on. I mean, you find stuff all the time. I do too. And I'm like, wow, this is great. How come I never heard of this? And,
right.
But I mean, as a player who, I still have a serious passion for the art, playing, and, I get a thrill out of writing a song, recording the song. I have great vintage gear at my studio. I use plexis and great gear. So the whole process still turns me on, and I'm excited about it. So I'd do it whether I sell 5 or 10 records or get 20,000 views or a few million. I still would be the same.
Yeah.
I'd still have a passion for it.
Well, and I think that's the thing that keeps real players at it, is that passion and that love for.
Yeah, you got to have the drive, and because there's always been a lot of rejection in this business, even when there was a shitload of record labels.
Because I can recall the days of being in high, because I didn't start playing until 26.
Yeah.
But I always loved the guitar. I Buck Dharma and Eddie Van Halen, Michael Schenker. Some of them guys were just, huge influences. But I can recall having, it was a court.
Yeah.
At a court West Ball. Yeah. Never played it, sat in the corner because I didn't know how to play it. Yeah. I didn't have the... the drive at that time to try to learn it, when I was in high school. But man, I played a lot of air guitar.
Yeah.
listening to Molly Hatchet and shit, It's like, it's a passion. It's an absolute passion. Yeah, you can't be in this for money.
No, I mean, you got to love it. I mean, I wake up every day and have a coffee and grab my guitar and stuff comes out. And, I still have the same fire I had, I think, when I was a teenager. So,
Yeah. So, what's your website?
AnthonyKrizan.com. www.AnthonyKrizan.com. And my Facebook is Anthony Krizan Band.
Yeah. So people can tune in and they can go there and they can follow your tour and buy CDs, which everybody needs to do.
You got to support the guys. A lot goes into finishing a song. We give away or whatever it is.
We end up giving away most of it.
Oh, no.
Well, I tell you what, man, it was really cool spending some time with you, man. Hopefully you don't get my poison ivy. No, it's not on that hand. I got poison ivy, everybody.
I'm allergic to it too, but you're tough, man.
I'm a trooper. So it's going to be a great show. And
thanks, I'm looking forward to it, Jimmy.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so
my makeup, man.
Yeah, bring in the makeup.
Get him in here right away.
I got Rick Knapp, man. You know, I've actually known about you and have...
From the post office?
Yeah, so I can picture there once, and that I even called 911, and they laughed at me and said, he's wanted everywhere.
Yeah, well...
You're an interesting guy, Rick. You know, really, really, you got a really interesting history, and you've played with some of the people that I've always admired and always followed, and it's an absolute pleasure to have you here in Muscle Shoals with me and Anthony.
Dude,
and
thanks for calling me up and bringing me along.
Yeah, I pulled him out of retirement. Right?
Retired from the road in 2018, I thought... You know, my shoes are worn out.
Yeah.
And maybe I need, you know what it is, after enough 100 days in Europe every year and 100 days in Station Camp, 200 days out a year, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of hotel keys, as you know, you've seen them.
I've seen them.
Yeah. And I wanted a little bit of my life back because I started, you know, I was in my first band in 1964. We were kids, children, but the guitars and amps were cool then. You know, you always wanted... I mean, we were listening to the Ventures and the Shantays and this instrumental surf rock. And then, of course, the Beatles came and all hell broke loose. And, you know, it was just time to try and take a little bit of my life back after giving it to other people. You know, you're on call 24 hours, basically. Yeah. And so I did that. And then, of course, the plague came. And then everybody sat around, right?
Nobody's doing anything.
Nobody's doing anything. So.
Yeah, everybody's afraid.
And in that, you know, in the time, my time in the Catskill Mountains by Woodstock, I spent 5 years there learning about recording and software and things, very foreign. I mean, I was a tape machine guy, wasn't I? That's the way it was. So that's what I did, and I moved, you know, finally we sold our place and moved into Fort Wayne, Indiana, right down the street from Sweetwater Sound. That was dangerous. So, you know, I put this my studio together, and I've been recording. I record with guys overseas, Terry Slesser from Paul Kossoff's band, and Dane Clark from John Mellencamp's band does some drum tracks with me, Bruce Cass from Greg Allman's band, and Ronnie Earl, and, you know, that's what I've been doing, until you called me up and said, hey, dude, you want to go play in Alabama? Sure, why not? My wife wants me out of the house anyway.
Yeah, but you know, we'll step back a little bit because, again, you know, as I said, you know, in the beginning, you've had such an interesting career in history in that, and for the people that don't know, let's say they don't know who you are, Rick, in that, for the people that don't know, man, you've played with blues legends like Sam Lay and Kerry Bell, and you were in Walter Trout's band, and that led to, you know, I'm sure jamming with just about every legend you can imagine, and you were with Jimmy Thackeray and Duke Tomato, and you did shows with Albert Cummings, and yeah, I'm mentioning them. I don't know them all, but I'm mentioning them.
I don't know them all.
Yeah.
I am just a guy that got into this thing at a time, right? I mean, in the 60s, early 60s. And then when 1970 hit, all hell broke loose for me. First of all, the police ran me out of town, basically. Long-haired guy playing rock and roll music. That's not going to work in a conservative little Midwestern town. So I went to Florida. Let the games begin.
Yeah.
Suddenly it's Marshall Stacks and I'd bought... a bass amp. I was a guitar player, but everybody needs that bass player.
Right.
How am I going to support myself? Well, sure, I play bass. Well, as it turns out, that's what I was known for. But, you know, it was, there were different decades and different places that were very important to me. 70s in South Florida, man, I wouldn't trade that for anything. That was the real thing. I mean, Jocko's down there. There's all these characters there, you know. I'm playing with Blood Rock's coming into the club and Johnny Winter's guys and Captain Beyond and Cactus and all these guys, you know. And we're playing this club called the Flying Machine, 10 to 4,
no.
You know. But it was a magic time of music, as you know. And then, of course, into the next decade, and that brought a whole... Well, I left Florida because disco came, right?
Right.
And that's, I mean, that's the way it was. It was just like overnight, like everybody's going to disco, but not me. Instead, I went to Chicago and joined up with blues guys. I didn't know anything about any blues music, but I've heard it. I saw a guy that I was going to be playing with named Cary Bell. I saw him at a show in Hollywood Sportatorium in Florida. A guy named Cary Bell playing with Muddy Waters, the harp guy from Muddy Waters. And, you know, I didn't realize not too many years later, I was going to be playing with Cary Bell and Sam Lay from Butterfield. And that was an education.
Yeah.
Actually ended up being the magic time that sometimes you can't see it. I mean, how would you know? You're just there. It's another day. Mm-hmm. And these guys were incredible. Very kind to me, took me in and made me feel like one of them. And I really learned how to play bass from those guys,
yeah.
or at least in a certain genre. And it was because of that time that nobody really, I mean, guys were making fun of me. You're going to Chicago and play with these guys for $25 a night, you can stay here and make $300. I was like, no, man, I'm going to go up there. They were killer. I mean, best band I was ever in. That's how I feel. And apparently, Walter Trout was a big fan of Sam Lay. And that's how I ended up joining Walter many, many years later. But I got to play, you know, several times. You know, when Bo Diddley would come to town, well, he'd get us to play. I was playing with some other blues band in Indianapolis, and we'd end up being Bo's band. And I mean, it worked that way for Chuck Berry long ago, back in the when I was playing with Sam and Cary and Bob Reed's blues band. When Chuck would come, he came to town, and he hired our band to be his band. That's the way it was, pickup bands, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole nother.
Yeah.
Everything's a story.
Right.
It depends how deep you want to go.
Right. But with the when you're talking about those days, those old days with Sam Lay and Cary Bell and the blues and that, you know, from my own experience, the early cats that I played with in Chicago, you know, all the blues guys, Lefty Diaz, Sun Seals, you know, Junior Wells, all those kinds of guys, it was a completely different mindset and atmosphere. It was very welcoming. It was like you were a part of that. They were nurturing you. They were, you know, guiding you along the way.
Everyone's welcome. Yeah.
But now that's gone. Or at least it feels like it's gone.
Everybody dead.
Well,
everybody dead.
But people are different, though. Wouldn't you say that the mindset of a lot of the musicians today is completely different? People aren't as inviting. They're not as welcoming. They're not as, you know, they don't invest in you the way those guys would.
The things that you were supposed to learn, and this is just as a human being and as a, back in the 60s and 70s, you were supposed to learn about openness and being kind and welcoming, and that went away. It died off. I mean, all those guys were very kind to me, and it was magical. I did not know at the time how important that was. I didn't know. Hell, I'm right there. It's another day with the boys. And, you know, you realize a long time later what you did and were fortunate enough to take part in. And, in the end result, it's like, okay, I don't really want for anything. I accomplished far more than I ever thought.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always a pursuit. You're always pursuing all this time, trying to be whatever you're trying to be. I always just wanted to be a good player. I wanted to learn how to play. Still want to learn how to play. So, you know, here I am. Maybe let's see if you can show me some stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if I can show you anything. That's for sure. But I'm really glad that you accepted the invitation to come to Florence and do this show with
me and Anthony. I'm the one that's glad, man. I can't believe you asked me to come. I was like, yeah. I've been kind of holed up for a while. in my studio, you know, doing my thing. Finally got a record out. Well, record. Digital format out, right?
right. Yeah.
Rick Knapp Prime Cuts. Not that it means anything to anybody, but I had it. I love recording. I love painting with sound, basically. I love the sonics of the thing. And, you know, I mean, I've been lucky. That's the way it seems to me, luck. I mean, I got to record, you know, in the Walter Trout years, I was telling them, recording with Joe Bonamassa and John Mayall and Coco Montoya and Richie Hayward. You know, how is that possible? I'm some guy from Indiana that grew up in the cornfields. And everybody said, you better go to college and get you a job, boy. That didn't work out.
But you know what? The education that came with those early days, you know, even though, like you said, you know, you were playing in Chicago for $25 a night, at that point in your life, though, you know, what you're getting back from the surroundings that you're in and what you're doing is worth so much more, you know, than $25, because you... Yeah, one thing that's really interesting about you, Rick, is how you have, you know, cataloged your life in photos and videos and, you know, music and different
things. I'm obsessive.
Yeah. But it's really, really cool because there's so many players that most people have played with somebody at some time, right? They got to sit in or they got to open for or whatever. If you're around long enough, that happens. But... not many people get that education today that you got back then or that I got in the time that I was doing. It just doesn't happen.
I'm an old guy. I was around.
Right.
You know, and I took chances and I always went my own way. I never learned the parts I was supposed to learn. I didn't play it like the record. I couldn't. It wasn't me.
Right.
So I did it my way. Ended up being an important thing. Doing it your way. So, you know, it's like if a person comes to me and they want to learn to play or something, I mean, really, learning to play means to me learning to listen, learn to hear. That's first. Without that, you got nowhere to go. And, you know, you got to learn to tune your guitar. You got to, there are these things. Just like for me, I'm no shredding guy. The magic happens. Not in the left hand, the magic's in the right hand.
Yeah.
It is. Mm-hmm. That's where the character, that's where the stuff, you need wonderful bends, and you need to know when you bend in tune, don't overshoot it, a nice, even vibrato. Thank you, Leslie West and Johnny Winter and some of these guys. That's, you know, I would learn, study techniques and try to emulate certain things. Simple phrasing, say a whole lot with a little. Still working on that one. Guys don't do that enough. You go into the, you know, whatever guitar place and all that, the young people are in there blazing. I can't even do that. I don't want to do that. It's not a, it doesn't give me anything. Playing from within is what you're after. Play from within. Let the feel take you. That's what you can't learn later on. Do it from the start. The feel, the sonic intensity, the physical sound. I was always a guy listening to sound. I was very fortunate in that I got good gear early on. I knew the difference. I experienced all the vintage guitars. I was a vintage guitar buyer for Jim Beach at Wooden Music in Chicago. And I got to experience that stuff. So I was listening. I was no great player. I'm no great player. I'm a great listener.
Yeah,
and a blabbermouth, obviously.
Well, the listening is definitely shown to me in the time that we've spent here in Muscle Shoals. You know, just kind of rehearsing, and you know, in the dining room of this Airbnb with Anthony and Mike, and that. I mean, it's very obvious that you paid close attention to, you know, the tunes and what people are doing and stuff.
Here's
like
the
that.
Problem for the bass player. The bass, I have a big appreciation for bass players. I'm no bass player. I did it. I needed to. The bass player has to know the song. Mm-hmm. The guy, the melody guy on top, the guitar players, the this and that, and the drummer needs to know. Because the foundation don't crack the foundation, boys. And they can, you can just layer on top, whatever, and you can lay out. I can't lay out. I gotta keep going. I hope I got that change right.
Right.
It's all about being able to anticipate what's coming, which means you gotta remember. That's tough after living through the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
But, you know, we sounded pretty good. And, you know, this is a very rewarding experience coming out here with you. And, well, you got me out of the basement. And
that basement's pretty cool, though. And, you know, and for those that, you know, again, you mentioned that you put out some music, which we want people to, you know, go to Spotify or YouTube or wherever
it is. iTunes, it's on all the platforms.
It's on all of them.
Prime Cuts.
But one thing I can say is from what I've heard, you know, it's quality music. I mean, it really is. You could tell.
It's been difficult in that I had to be everything from, I had to learn how to use the stuff, right?
Yeah.
Pro Tools. I've done these records. I never really paid attention. I mean, we're supposed to go and do your part and then they're doing all this stuff. It's all computers and... So I had to learn that well enough. And then, you know, be the writer, the player, the engineer, the mixer, all the things. And the technician, you know, keeping all the guitars correct. And I feel good about how it turned out. I'm getting better. The last song I did was Downtown Panic. I was like, I sent that to Bruce Cassidy. I go, dude, that's wonderful production and it's big and nice and... He liked it. It's instrumental rock music, you know. Mm. But I've got some with some killer singers. My ex-tour manager, Andrew Elk, from a band called the Sleaze Bees in Holland. Andrew's killer. Anyway, he was over visiting, and he sang one of my tunes called Push. It's magnificent. And I got a sax solo. People going, you can't put a sax solo on a rock song like that. Well.
You can if it's yours.
And I got Jay Collins from Greg Allman's band to come in and do this sax solo. It worked really nicely. For me, it's what I like.
Yeah.
Not everybody's going to like that, but it's what I did. But, you know, I think there are certain times that stick out in your life, right? Mm-hmm. And in my road, there's nothing higher for me than when I was a kid in 1966, I took those photos of the Yardbirds, right? And some guy named Jeff Beck was playing guitar and some guy named Jimmy Page playing bass. Who's he? I don't know who Jimmy Page is. I knew who the Yardbirds were because we played For Your Love. And so I took these photos and years later when I was in Walter Trout, I got an email that said, yes, we became aware of your photos. We'd like to put some of these up on our website. And I sent a message back and said, I don't really give these out. I mean, who are you? We're Led Zeppelin. We'd like to put some on our website. I'm like, oh, okay. Can I have photo credit? Which they did. And they're still there in the pre-Led Zeppelin time. And then years later, I was doing a show in London with Walter at it was a film premiere about the life of Riley, about B.B. King. And we're playing, and Andrew L., tour manager, some old guy comes up, guy like me, and gets on stage. I'm like, oh. You know, looking at Andrew. He says, it's okay. Well, come to find out, I get off the stage, and it's Mick Taylor. Okay. Okay, never mind. But while we were playing, I looked straight out in front of me. There's Jeff Beck sitting right in front of me. I'm like, oh. So I went out and showed Jeff this photo I had on my phone that I took of him in 1966. He freaked out. That was a big moment for me, this thing starting from so long ago. Mm-hmm. And it's all over the world and all this stuff, and boom. It's like, oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Those are moments of, very rewarding moment is all I can say. Of course, not as rewarding as being here with you out here in Alabama getting ready to go do this show, but...
It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's
going to be a lot of fun.
I'm
going to have a good time.
We sound good.
Yeah.
We did good today.
Yeah.
I'm glad we came down a day early just to familiarize ourselves. These are things we've never heard.
Yeah.
Well, me and the other boys, I think... it's a real pleasure.
Yeah.
I'm happy you asked me.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad that we could share a little bit about your history and your life and stuff with, you know, the people that tune in to Guitar Talk, because it's guys, you know, I hope you don't mind me saying this, but it's guys like you that make music interesting, that make the music career, being a musician, interesting, because everybody gives credit to the guy in the front. You know what I mean? Like you were with Walter, everybody gives credit to Walter, but the truth be told, you know, that people that are out front wouldn't be out front if it wasn't for guys like
this. It's you. A collective.
It effort. Is.
Yeah, all, it everybody's is. An equal, important guy.
Exactly.
It is, no matter how, you know, we've all been in a situation where he's this, he's not that, he's this, that. Everybody is very important and should be credited and should be appreciated like that. You know what I mean? It's not an easy job.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be that, don't they? Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you, it used to be finish college. Now it's not even that. I'm not sure what.
Right.
Get your social media thing together.
learn how to market yourself.
Learn how to do something I don't know anything about.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's been a wonderful experience, and I feel good having taken too many photos along the way. And I've got my song list from 1965. Who does that?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Yeah. I don't have one from the last gig I did 4 weeks ago.
Dude, it's not normal. I'm not proud of this stuff.
No, you should be. It's really cool. You know, I've been fortunate to be at your place and to be in, you know, your basement where your stuff is, and to see the catalog or the history and posters and photos and room keys and passports and all that kind of stuff is extremely interesting. Extremely interesting.
I wish you'd have gone with me on some of that stuff.
Yeah.
We might have had fun and been in trouble.
Probably. We stayed out of trouble this time, though.
You know, the trouble years are gone, I guess. But maybe we can make that happen today a little later on.
Yeah, who knows? We'll get in trouble. I appreciate you chatting with me, Rick.
And, thanks for taking
it's going to be a great show tonight.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Where's the CD booth?
It's gonna be out front somewhere. In that.
Well, thanks, man. Yeah. I mean, you know, time's racing. You never know what your timeline is.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel fortunate to be able to play still.
Yeah.
Hell, I feel like I'm on top of my game, actually.
Yeah.
I feel like that, whether I am or not. Don't tell me if I'm not.
I'm not going to say nothing, so we're good. Well, I appreciate it, Rick. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.